This is Tom Osmond. This is the first edition of Twin Cities Flashback for December 1st. Present and future course is based upon our past experiences, and much of what we recall of history, we rely on our cerebral memory and photographs, slides, and film to figure out how to look at them. From the end of World War II and through the next 50 years, much of our current adult generations recall and understand history from the medium of TV and radio. TV and radio had a complimentary, maybe convenient marriage for the next 50 years. Five channels, maybe some cable channels, six or seven radio stations. What we learned about the world overseas, and even in the next town over, all came from announcer, all came from images we saw through the medium of television. Until this wire we found a way to attach to our phone and our computer that the government had used for decades, and consumers found a way to use that to our advantage. So what I seek to do is provide an opportunity to relive history again, the sounds and visuals of video. And on this program, through some selected audio clips and an archive of video and radio recordings dating back 60 years. Some voices from the past and present will join us to talk about some of these events that shaped and changed our community. And I hope to interact with you also and encourage your questions and memories. Number here, 651-275-1220. So, in the last couple of weeks, we've been threatened with some change, and change is tough, depending on if it's change that affects you or not, and sometimes it's just change that you hadn't expected. The Wonder Bread Company had a... I was surprised at how many people were upset the Twinkies were going away, allegedly, that had never eaten a Twinkie or hadn't had a touch of Twinkie in about 13, 14 years. I think I last had one at a vending machine in high school, making some really healthy choices. But I was looking through some commercials that I had from some tapes, and I think that we saw this coming a long time ago. James, you can hit audio number 2.
No problem.
Twinkie the Kid. Here, Mom?
I only see the Hostess Twinkies.
To kids, I'm just as real as the great taste of that moist cake and creamy filling.
Try one, Mom. Daddy, you see him?
I'm beginning to.
Hostess Twinkies, cupcakes, and fruit pies. With Hostess, tasting is believing.
No. Was that Twinkie the Kid?
That was Twinkie the Kid.
It's been a long time since I saw an ad with Twinkie the Kid.
Well, you know, he took a semi-retirement, and that's the thing where the sales were not as strong as they would be. Track number one actually has, it's just by Wonder Bread, the parent company Twinkie, and let's take a look at that.
Fresh corn, plump and juicy. Every day, I pick only as much as I can sell, because if it isn't fresh, I'm out of business.
I'm just as particular about freshness as Harry is, so our bread is Wonder. I know it's fresh by squeezing. That's freshness. If it isn't fresh, I'm out of business.
Wonder bakes for freshness. Try the fresh taste.
He predicted the Wonder Bread demise 35 years ago. Now, I know that once one of these companies buys a Twinkie brand, the Twinkie sales are going to top anything else. Is this like the new Coke strategy? Take your favorite product away that you haven't touched? And
well, you know, it works for Disney. They do that every time they come out with a movie.
The
Vault. Disappears for 20 years, they bring it out again.
I think the vault control is not as tight as you'd think it is. That vault seems to be opened up pretty frequently. Larry Hagman, he played J.R. Ewing on Dallas, and also Major Nelson on Dream and Genie. Again, it's a 20th century cultural icon that you assume is always going to be there. In fact, I think Dallas came back for its 27th season, I think, this last spring. And unfortunately, he passed away last Friday. But I think that what's interesting about this is the Who Shot JR era, 1980, was at the time the second or third most watched moment in TV history. You play clip number three once. Just get a little bit of a flavor of what was going on at that point.
The Incredible Hulk will continue in a moment.
Who shot JR? Tonight on Dallas, the truth comes out.
I wanted to kill him.
Maybe next time.
I've put up with all the backstabbing that I'm going to.
I'll kill him. I'm surprised somebody didn't do it a long time ago.
Who shot JR? The world will find out tonight on Dallas.
Are you riveted?
My attention is held. Actually, even people that are my age who didn't grow up with JR, they know how important it was to the generation.
You know, it's a great show, and it's unfortunate this how Larry passed away before he could finish up the last season of Dallas that he started. But I think it was 30 million people watched the premiere of Dallas that year to find out who did shot JR. And because a lot of people have not seen it, I will not spoil it and tell you who did. So check out the DVD, check out mine. But Larry was versatile. He did find ways in order to make some income outside of Dallas. So if you want to play clip number four, this is Larry Hagman doing the commercial. I don't think was played in the number of accolades that were out there this week.
Larry Hagman on The Competition.
Competition? Darling, I didn't know I had any. And that's a quality feeling.
That's BVD. You can't get BVD quality in any other underwear. BVD is so soft, so strong. Why, you can see right through them, can't you? Now you know what's really behind my success. Let's just keep it under our hats,
You know what Larry does to his competition.
Ah.
See for yourself what we do to ours. BVD, legendary quality.
I just love coming out on top.
So Larry's agent probably had dozens of offers to do endorsements, and this is the one they chose. I find that very, very interesting. So today we're going to talk about a change that happened in downtown Minneapolis, not by thoughtful planning, but by an act of arson, an unexpected and dramatic event that unfolded 30 years ago this past Monday. And actually, I have what this was. Donaldson's Department Store, which there's going to be a good portion of people listening to this don't even remember what that was. And Donaldson's was the rival to Dayton's and Powers, all names, of course, that are gone and have been long gone. This next clip, though, just to give a idea of what Donaldson's was, this commercial aired every time there was a sale at Donaldson's, and it lasted long after the inside joke of what it intended to do was gone. So I played clip number five once.
Live from Donaldson's, it's Saturday night! 15% savings on every regular and sale price item in the store. From 9 a.m. to midnight, you'll save on men's and women's fashion, electronics, domestics, housewares, everything in the store. It's live Saturday night at all Donaldson's.
So he's doing this Chevy Chase pratfall in the video, and you can see this actually on tcmedianow.com. He trips over the escalator, a la Chevy Chase, but the unfortunate thing is they aired this commercial about 10 years after Chevy Chase left the show. So hopefully people remembered that when they saw that, and it could have been part of the demise. Who knows? When we come back, we are going to listen to some audio and talk a little bit about, again, an event that happened 30 years ago this week.
Since the early 1920s, it had looked much the same, an imposing building that served as one of the main attractions on Nicollet Mall. But early last evening, flames were spotted inside the old Donaldson's building, flames that quickly spread to the Northwestern National Bank. And tonight, there is a very different scene on Nicollet Mall. Two buildings continue to smolder after one of the worst fires in Minneapolis history. That story dominates tonight's 6 p.m. report.
November 26, 1982, for almost 100 years, this building had stood. It was known as the Glass Block, Donaldson's Department Store. Even before the iconic Dayton's opened up in downtown Minneapolis, Scottish immigrants opened the L.S. Donaldson Company in 1883, eventually erecting a flagship store. A small dome was on top of the building, which was then dismantled and taken down during World War II for the scrap metal and glass. So what was left was a concrete block, and this is what was from 1920s to beyond. When the City Center complex opened up in the early 1980s, Donaldson's moved over to City Center, and this building remained vacant and very unsecure. for what was understood to be a couple of juveniles were squatting or you know, causing challenges in the building, started this fire, was not known for a few days. So let's, Jane, let's go to track number 7 once.
After a devastating fire.
The 5-alarm fire took its toll on both firefighters and property. 10 firemen were treated for smoke inhalation. One fireman may have suffered a heart attack. Meanwhile, estimates of the damage to the buildings is running now as high as $30 million. Tonight, more than 24 hours after the flames were first spotted, some Minneapolis firemen remain on the scene. And Dave Nimmer is standing by live now with a report for us. Dave?
Well, Pat, the fire was, of course, a disaster in terms of the dollar damage, but in many other ways, the firefighters in the cities were lucky. The building was empty, and there was no rush hour traffic. That also meant there were not many witnesses to turn in alarms, so the fire did get a good start. Flames were 80 to 100 feet high by the time the first crews arrived. But if yesterday had been a work day...
I think we could have had a real disaster if it started and got that head start like it did on a work day. We could have lost a lot of people.
The consensus is that firefighters did well to contain the blaze to one block. They were aided by the fact that no burning walls collapsed on other buildings and that the wind was a calm 2 miles an hour. And then again, things could have been easier.
The way to fight a fire like this is build the protection into the building.
And this was not sprinkled, Northwestern National Bank building?
No, when it was built, it was not required to be sprinkled.
Would sprinklers have made a difference, Chief?
Yes, they would have. I think the damage would have been very slight from fire, but we may have had a lot of water damage, too. But we could have saved a lot more of the building.
This morning, arson investigators were poking through the smoking rubble. There had been early reports of arson, of a man who told passersby that he started the fire. But some of those reports are conflicting, and now investigators say they do not know whether the fire was deliberately set.
So the Donaldson building, which was vacant, burned down. The Northwest Bank building, which would be today's Wells Fargo, also went down. And unlike the Donaldson building, the Wells Fargo building did have the executive offices and did have a working, functional office. Let's go to track number 8.
The sun rose this morning over a smoke-filled downtown. Employees of companies located all around the fire scene had to find new routes to work. Some crossed barricades, inching their way along icy sidewalks, below windows, even though every so often pieces of glass came crashing to the pavement. Others asked directions to work, still others just came to gawk. Flames continued to pour out of Donaldson's windows in the early hours. Later, it was just the smoke and ice that drew the crowds. Many observers, including Mayor Don Fraser, are somewhat awed that it happened.
Somehow you couldn't believe that something like that would happen in the middle of downtown. I mean, you can think of a rickety old wooden structure, but these modern steel and structures you somehow think are should be immune from this kind of a fire.
City officials are still trying to assess the cost of fighting the blaze. The highest cost will be for overtime pay to firefighters, up to 1,000 hours a time and a half. Police officials say their reserves saved the day for them. 90 reserves volunteered their time for 10 hours each. Officials still haven't determined just what will need to be done in terms of street repair. Through it all, there's a sense of relief that it wasn't worse.
Well, it was a disaster, I think, for that block. It could have been a disaster of much greater proportion if it hadn't been contained. So I think that's what we're grateful for.
Officials aren't estimating how long cleanup here will take. But certainly many Minneapolis residents will remember this fire for a long time to come. Barb Brown, WCCO Television News, Minneapolis.
You know, I was actually surprised. I looked at the papers online and print this week, and there's not a lot, not any mention of the anniversary of the fire. And if I'm wrong, please someone tell me that there is an article on that. But 30 years, I guess, is enough time to forget about it. With me today is KLBB's Stan Turner, who was at the fire the day it happened, after it had been announced, and then, of course, the next day. Stan, thank you for coming in early this morning to
I always
join
get
me.
Here 4 hours before my show, Tom. It's great stuff. No, this is fun. In fact, I used to start my show, which is now in its 8th year, at 8 o'clock. I did 2 hours from 8 to 10 the first couple of years. So, hey, this is natural for me.
Well, hey,
and
hey,
it's great to be with you.
Well, thanks. You know, I was actually looking for some more video of this fire. For right now, the only video I can find is the video that I've actually posted to tcmedianow.com, which a gentleman named Kurt Lundgren, who used to be at CCO FM, yeah, taped on his home VCR and gave to me last year. Mm-hmm. I did find a lot of turkeys that exploded in deep fryers on Thanksgiving, mm-hmm, but I did not find any of the bank video. So were you off on Thanksgiving? Were you at home? And
Well, Thanksgiving Day, my daughter and I remember we had Thanksgiving dinner downtown St. Paul about noon hour, one or two. And I was on duty that night at Channel 5. So as often was the case, I took daughter Laura with me. She kind of, in a sense, grew up down there at Channel 5. She loved to come down. She got to know all the producers and the directors and everybody. She was kind of an ex officio part of the crew. So she was with me. And I think the plan was that Laura and I, between the 6 and 10 o'clock news, which I was co-anchoring, we'd go out maybe for a spot of dinner, you know, a late second round of Thanksgiving dinner somewhere, if something was open. But our dispatch room, where the man sits or the woman sits, monitors police and fire calls, that room got very active early in the evening. And it was a fire. It started out a couple of fire reports in downtown Minneapolis. Nothing terribly unusual, but this one grew and grew and grew, and more calls went out for fire rigs and fire personnel. This sounded so big that we were thinking maybe I should go down and do a live promo for the 10 o'clock news down there. And since this was obviously a developing story, how big it was at the moment, we didn't know. So Laura and I jumped in. She went with me. I didn't think I was going to stay there. I'd be back at 10 o'clock at the station to do the newscast. But as we approached, we just left KSTP, got onto University Avenue, and you could see the halo of light. This is dark now. You could see the halo of light. This was a biggie, folks. We got on the two-way radio and said, I think I'll be doing the 10 o'clock news, my part, from down here, if we can get a live signal out of there. So Laura, I sent her back to the station because what we haven't said here was it was desperately cold that night. I'm still cold from that evening. I don't know if you have the records here, but the wind chill was vicious, absolutely vicious. And I got down there. We got ourselves positioned, and thanks to our technical crew, Jim Biaggi and some of the folks, they had to bounce a satellite signal. They went up to, they finally got onto a ramp on the top of a parking ramp in the north end of the loop and bounced a signal. It was like a three-cornered shot in pool. They got it back because we KSTP did not have a stick on top of the IDS building.
This is relatively new. I mean, satellite
right.
Live shots was relatively new. This was still the era where you filmed or taped your material.
That's right. Thanks to the technical crew, we did get a live signal out of there. And I started doing a number of cut-ins. And I want to thank, even to this day, 30 years later, the Minneapolis Fire Department for that wonderful fire rig by which I stood keeping my feet by the exhaust manifold that kept me from getting frostbite. It was that bad. Those poor firefighters pouring water in sub-zero cold, and they were there for hours and hours and hours. But we did a number of cut-ins, and I think we were the first TV station to have live reports out of downtown. CCO-TV, which you just heard excerpts from, they were two blocks away, and they were late getting there. They beat us on occasion, too. But that was
and I'm guessing
a juicy irony, I thought.
Everyone had a day off. I mean, this was a slimmed-down JV crowd that was running the town, not necessarily Channel 5, of course. But
We never have a holiday, you know, broadcasting. So
this had to take a lot of people that were sitting at home and slicing turkey by surprise to come on down and get your fire gear on and get the hose and start spraying water into the...
It was a maximum effort. There's no question about it. I remember the following day, after I thawed out, I went back down to do, I think, the 5 and 6 o'clock news from down there. And by that time, in daylight, the old Donaldson store had been reduced to kind of a grotesque ice palace. Everything was frozen in place. There were icicles that seemed 2-3 feet long hanging off the building, or what was left of it. And the early reports, we didn't know what the origin was, but as you indicated, I think there were some transients, some kids in there who were lighting up and who knows doing what. Couldn't have been doing too much in that cold, but they were out of the wind, and whatever fire they set got away from them.
Well, we actually have the... Let's go to track number 9, actually. This will kind of set the stage for what you were doing.
Now, Cindy Brucato, Dennis Bounds, and meteorologist Dennis Belkin. This is Eyewitness News at 5.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're looking at a live picture of the site of the worst fire in Minneapolis history. It was just about this time, 24 hours ago, that flames from the old Donaldson's building on Nicollet Mall spread to the Northwestern National Bank headquarters and then caused some $30 million in damage. Well, Stan Turner is standing by live at the scene of that fire. We will give the latest to you in just a moment. Dennis?
Also in the next half hour, Tony Vigneri will report on a plan to build a $50 million horse racetrack right here in the Twin Cities.
Again, in downtown Minneapolis, for the latest on what's the biggest fire in Minneapolis history. Stan?
Cindy, there's so much noise down here. Wrecking crews have just gotten to work. I can only presume you asked me what's happening. It looks a lot like it did last night. The fire, of course, is under control. Firefighters, many of them remain at the scene right here. Cleanup operations, trying to make sure that the fire does not rekindle. And a wrecking ball has just gone to work here on the 6th Street side, starting to knock down what is left of the north side of the old Donaldson's department store. Of course, more than 100 firefighters were here last night and through much of the night to contain the blaze to the one block area, which is bounded by Nicollet Mall to the west, 6th Street to the north, Marquette to the east, and 7th to the south. At least 9 firefighters were treated for minor injuries. One firefighter is hospitalized with chest pains, but amazingly, the injuries did not get any worse. Now, this is being called the most destructive fire ever in the history of downtown Minneapolis.
Do you get chills just remembering that day and being up in that in the weather?
Yeah. It was bloody cold the second day, that one you just heard there. Again, my heart and thoughts go out to the fire people. The fire investigators, the fire marshal's office, of course, was full bore in there. They're the ones who are charged with trying to find out how it got started. But they were worried that there might be a flare-up here and there because, again, it's hard to underestimate the massive size of this fire, an entire city block. And I'll tell you, that corona of fire driving to it the night before was absolutely scary. It looked like some films out of World War II with Berlin under attack by the bombers. It was really amazing.
Stan, it seems yes, like James. You were kind of between a rock and a hard place. Like, if you were too close, you were going to get burned.
Right.
But as soon as you went away, you were freezing.
We got close enough, though. The fire was so big, you could get you had a ringside seat 2 blocks away. I think we were within a block and a half. I said right by one of the fire rigs. And again, that wonderful, beautiful, hot exhaust manifold literally saved me from frostbite. And the photographer, too, and I can't remember who it was, but gallant people on the technical crew there getting that signal out in cold weather. So we had kind of a drop on it, and I think we had pretty decent coverage.
How late were you there the day of? How late did you stay there?
Well, through the 10 o'clock news and probably beyond, I can't really remember. 30 years get you down, but I think that we did maybe some extra shots. Were we carrying whatever show followed our 10 o'clock news then? It certainly wasn't the Tonight Show anymore, but I don't know what it was.
Nightline probably.
Nightline probably, yeah. And I think probably did some cut-ins because, again, we didn't know about injuries, possible deaths, and all the rest. So it was still a developing story late at night, in fact, overnight, and only with daylight did we start to get bits and pieces of what had happened there beyond the fact that we had a big fire. How did it start? How many people were hurt? That sort of thing.
Well, amazing. No one was injured or killed in this. And hate to say, thankfully, happened Thanksgiving. If it's going to happen, but two things. Number one, no one was injured or killed because it was Thanksgiving. But second of all, do you think it would have escalated as fast or as hard as it did had there been people that would have called the fire department earlier? Do you think?
I don't know that. I think the alarms went in pretty fast. There are passersby. It wasn't as though downtown Minneapolis on Thanksgiving night was a ghost town. There were people out and about. Not a lot, but enough to turn in the alarm. So I think it got going. No strong winds. That's the report. I can't remember. It just was cold. So I don't think there were the winds was a huge factor. It just got going. Like Mayor Fraser and the fire chief there said, it's amazing that a building, basically concrete and steel, went up like that so fast and stayed alight for so long. It was just amazing. Here we are in Minnesota's biggest city, right smack downtown, and we have a colossal fire that these gallant firefighters took a long time to put out.
Well, part of this building was being demolished. This building was being dismantled. Right. There was probably lots of construction materials throughout the building. And also probably when this building was built and retrofitted many times, there was, fireproofing and other types of material that would be made in even, post-20th century buildings was not part of this. Mm-hmm. The other part about, the building itself, it was not from its classic state. It was a concrete building similar to what the Dayton store in St. Paul looked like. So it was, unfortunately, it burned, but it was not, it wasn't the classic building that it originally was.
It was not an architectural gem any means, but it was a landmark. And anybody of a certain age who grew up around in the 1950s and 60s knew, as you said, Dayton's, Donaldson's, and Powers were the center of gravity for shopping in downtown Minneapolis then. So for one of these to go up, despite the fact that it was not an architectural masterpiece, it still was an important landmark. And even though it was in the process of being, vacated, or it was vacated but being gotten rid of, it still was, kind of a shock to a lot of people who were used to it being there.
Let's go to clip number 10. We got some more audio on the bank incident that occurred.
Now, the officials are right now trying to figure out why the Donaldson's fire reached such intensity so quickly. It was awfully fast. But they can explain it spreading to the bank building, the adjacent building. The high flames literally leaped into the upper floor windows of the bank, and radiant heat even ignited some of those office space above the sixth floor level as well. The skyways between the bank and three adjoining buildings received high marks. Those skyways did. Everything worked to prevent the spread of the fire and most of the smoke. Now, the 6th Street Skyway even stood up under the force of a collapsing wall. Well, business as usual, that's what how the Northwestern Bank officials are describing their operations today, quite amazingly. Customers could still take care of their business at the Skyway Convenience Bank downtown or at any one of the bank's 6 branches.
All those facilities are fully operational.
Well, that was possible because the computers which keep all of a modern bank's accounts, the machines that process the checks and transfer money from bank to bank, and the people who answer customer questions, all of those were housed in a different building, the operations center, which is 4 blocks away. There wasn't even any money stored in the parts of the old building that burned. And though no one was allowed into the old building today, bank officials also assured customers that anything that they've deposited in the safe deposit vault is also safe.
Whether people will be able to get in to their vaults on Monday really depends upon the structural soundness of the building.
Keep your documents at the bank, so in case your house goes down,
there you go.
But then right, lose crown of the bank going down.
It's amazing, amazing, amazing. Get into those vaults. But interesting. Business as usual, basically. There, nice to have your documents and your computer files off site, isn't it? Huh? 4 blocks away. Or
well, in historical context, this is not the online banking era.
No.
This is when you went down to the bank and you filled your paperwork and
that's
you
right,
did any transaction.
Right, right,
and
real live tellers right across the cage from you there. The cage, those would be bars between you. And it was kind of quaint to hear all this stuff now.
Well, think how people in this market, went through the Depression at this point, 30 years ago, were still with us, and already saw their money probably get lost by a bank, and then they see the bank burn down, and luckily, lessons learned. I looked at, doing some research on this, the Northwest Bank Company had gone through 5 months earlier when the dome had actually went down. Earlier in the year, the snow had collapsed the dome roof. So there had been some structural challenges in Minneapolis this year. And they
Say challenges. Problems.
Problems. And, we always have problems, don't we?
Problems. And a challenge, yeah.
They actually had went through a corporate recovery process in case of fire, flood, or collapse. So in a way, we can thank the dome for collapsing the first time that Northwest Bank was able to come out of this.
Here's a big thank you to the dome for collapsing.
Exactly. Right. First time, right.
First time. There'd be more. And there were.
So in looking back at this, what do you think was, how did you cover the story differently? You think than
I don't. There's no script. You're winging it. You have a story in front of you that's unfolding, and you don't know where it's going.
Right.
And I can't really second guess myself. I think I did what any reporter would do down there. You're reporting what you're observing. The fire officials are a little bit busy at that moment, so you can't pull one aside. Although a couple of them did. I think an assistant deputy chief did come over at a point that was possible to spare a couple of moments from the fire lines, and gave us what he could give us. So, I think we did all that we could do, with the pictures, of course. Again, our technical crew getting a live picture of the unfolding fire on the air right away, and my trying to fill in as best I could what I could find out down there on the frozen streets of downtown Minneapolis.
And this was in the second day we played. That's Black Friday. This is the busiest shopping day of the year,
right.
And downtown still had four or five major department stores downtown. Yes. Unlike yes. today's look at downtown, this was a lot of shopping downtown.
Well, yeah, then two, you had the two things going on, the shoppers and then the gawkers, and some were one and the same. You know, people had seen this on the air, heard about it, read about it, wanted to come down and see it, so you get that, too. So you probably had double the number of people down there you normally would on Black Friday, James.
I think that was called, there was actually a term, the downtown dilemma. How do you deal with all this damage? How do you deal with the fire? And like 30,000, I think, people came downtown to see this.
Sure. What we call a gawker's slowdown. But they were there, and I was in the middle of the crush to do that 5 and 6 o'clock cut-in.
Well, and different from now is no one had a camera that could actually just go and broadcast and put online. I mean, this the only cameras were there were four or five.
Everybody, 10,000 people would have had video of the thing, right, at by today's standards.
Thousands of people not looking at the fire, but looking at their phone looking at the fire.
Look at my phone here.
Well, there's very little video that does exist of this, and if someone actually if someone taped this, please reach out to me on my website, tcmedianow.com. Very little exists, and even a couple broadcast organizations in town emailed me and asked me for some footage of this.
It's amazing
because,
that there isn't more out there.
It was a year old. You had a tape bulk. Hey, right. Yeah. Tape was expensive.
Somebody out there has some probably some Bell and Howell, 16-millimeter film that they shot
using slides
World War II camera. Well, people did. You know, it's Zapruder in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963. You know, he had this little camera, and he captured the Kennedy assassination. There must be somebody who was cranking away that night in downtown Minneapolis 30 years ago. So, folks, if you do, Tom, give them your website again.
TCMediaNow.com.
Yeah, that's it.
Let's play clip number 11. This is more on the bank.
Well, of course, one of the firms that was hardest hit by the fire was the Northwestern National Bank. To assess the damage, the bank's chairman of the board, Peter Gillette, has joined us this afternoon. It wasn't a very good day for you yesterday. You spent a lot of it out there watching that building go and not knowing how far it was going to go. That must have been a frightening experience for him.
It was frightening, Don, because about 7 o'clock last night, as the winds began to shift in that main fire blast started moving down Marquette Avenue towards 7th Street and moving down from the 11th and 12th floors down floor by floor. It was really a question of whether or not any part of the building was going to be saved. And, of course, we had another concern because we had a major exhibit inside our bank, and the beloved Lindbergh Jenny was sitting inside there. There was no way to get that plane out of there. But along with the fact that we were blessed by having no deaths, the Jenny was saved, and some portions of the bank have been saved. Whether they're saved for possible future use still remains to be seen.
Some parts of the bank were totally wiped out. That is, the interior parts of it were saved. Your office, for instance, is totally gone. That's on one side of the building. The other side of the building doesn't seem to be as affected.
Basically, the floors from 6 up through 16, from the center of the building, the center of Marquette, to 6th Street, are, for all intents and purposes, either burned out entirely, or the water damage or smoke damage is so bad that its future use would be highly questionable at this stage.
Here's some pictures of the Jenny. Did it sustain any damage that you know of?
To the best of our knowledge, no. I was in the building this afternoon for about an hour and a half. We're experiencing a lot of water leakage that's coming down from upper floors, but fortunately, I don't think not a drop of water really has gotten on the Jenny itself.
How long is it going to take to rebuild? Do you have any idea at all what it's going to take to put that back together, those upper floors?
No, it's structurally, we know that the building is structurally sound. It is not going to collapse. It'll take us some time before we can have a total assessment to really get some understanding of what is possible, what the cost would be to replace it. We are insured, but it's just going to take a lot of time. In the meantime, we have been making plans today, and we'll continue to do so tomorrow and Sunday, to relocate all of the facilities within the bank building itself to other locales throughout the downtown area.
I'd like to ask you a question that I hope you don't take as being flip, but we got a lot of phone calls when there was concern that the Northwestern Bank building was on fire. People calling us saying, is my money okay? Is the money okay?
The money is absolutely okay because, first of all, the vault doors are all entirely sealed. Nobody has opened those up.
But more importantly, I think all of our records that are computer-driven are housed down at our operations center, down further down the block. And everything is safe, the securities, the accounts, everybody's money is safe and secure, I'm pleased to report.
Very good. Thank you so much for coming in today
Thank you,
a day
Doug.
That I know can't be a very pleasant one
no,
for you.
No, it's not.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan. Is the money okay?
The money's okay, but I'm worried about my Edsel stock, Tom. I'm hoping that's okay. I hope that was in the vault, too.
I think it's safe. We'll come back in just a couple minutes, talk a little bit about some of the more of the artifacts, the Jenny and the weather ball. Upbeat tune. This is Tom Osmond. This is Twin Cities Flashback. Again, any comments or questions on the 1982 Thanksgiving fire of downtown Minneapolis, 651-275-1220. I'm with Stan Turner, former KSTP and current KLBB host, talking about the worst fire in Minneapolis history. Probably maybe the worst fire in Minnesota history also.
Hard to quantify that. Certainly in terms of damage and dollar loss, it is, yes.
And a couple of things we heard in the last couple audio clips was a couple of big, the weather ball. The weather ball that was on top of the Northwest Bank building.
I grew up in St. Louis Park, and from our house, out our kitchen window, I could see the weather ball on top of the bank building, and we kind of got our weather reports from that too. If it were white, it was this time of year, and the ball was white and blinking, you get the shovel out and you know the plows are coming. So it was fairly reliable, you know.
Did you know what happened to the ball after the fire?
No, I think it went to the fairgrounds.
It went to the fairgrounds.
That's what I thought. Yeah, boy, what a guy, huh? Gee.
And like many things, it was out at the fairgrounds in a garage, and then they decided in the year 2000 that hey, we've given up, so we're just gonna dismantle it, and it is scrapped.
There is something in this state, a small little entity called the Minnesota Historical Society, which I think would have loved to have had it. Were they asked if they wanted it?
You
Even if they put it in a warehouse, it would be saved. Did somebody junk it? Is it gone?
It's gone.
That's outrageous. That was iconic, to use that terrible word, but it was part of the skyscape.
I guess
of
apparently
Minneapolis,
they
huh?
said they were going to restore it. They were going to bring it
back.
But the state fair just, instead of doing what they promised there, just decided we're going to let it go.
I have a high regard for the state fair. It is a beautifully run, very effective and efficient. We all know, anybody who's gone out there to the fair, they do a great job year-round. So I'm not sure who or what happened there, who did what and who should have done something, but it's a pity it's gone. It really is.
The safe money apparently didn't make it to the weather ball to do a restoration.
Apparently not. The Lindbergh aircraft,
Jenny,
was already, I think, reduced to a skeleton. I think it today hangs in the, what else? How appropriate. The Lindbergh Terminal, the main terminal out of Twin Cities International. It's hanging from the ceiling up there, as well it should. And so that's safe and sound, we hope.
I was reading the Wells Fargo actually has, they do have a blog on this, and employees of the building are still working through what's, you know, now Wells Fargo. Lesson, don't bring your pearl necklace to work. One employee brought her pearl necklace to work to have it restrung, left it in her desk on Thanksgiving, and we know what happened after that. So don't bring your valuables to work.
There's a cautionary tale for you, folks, that's for sure. Yep. Leave those pearls at home.
Again, it was Black Friday, and a lot of commerce is going on downtown. Let's hit clip number 12 and learn a little bit how that went.
By all accounts, this should have been a banner day for downtown merchants. The streets were packed, and people had to wait in line just to get in and out of the stores. But unfortunately, not all these people came to shop.
To see the fire.
Come down to do any shopping?
No, just to look. Just a gawk. Just what we weren't supposed to do.
Did some shopping also. I wanted to see where my old office is. It was on the 16th floor of the building. I'm just on the corner office. And I see that it's completely gutted by fire. We moved out 5 months ago. Thank goodness.
Business was down throughout the area. A sobering disappointment for many merchants who had hoped holiday shoppers could boost sagging sales. The JCPenney store at 6th and Nicollet sustained minor smoke and water.
This is during a recession too. This was during a time in history.
Hard to keep track of all the recessions, isn't it,
right,
folks?
Right.
But they're nothing new, sadly.
No, and so looking and what's interesting with the video on tcmedianow.com is we have this fire video, we have this devastation downtown, and then all the commercials are for Black Friday sales. So that's, the more things...
Commerce must go on, ladies and gentlemen.
More things change, more they stay the same. I do love people to just come on down for, to hang out and
I'm doing what I was told not to do. I'm down here gawking. Yes, yes, and I'm proud of it, too. Yet ashamed at the same time. Can you be proud and ashamed at the same time? Yes.
Well, this was probably it was the beginning of the end for our Donaldsons. I read somewhere that it was compared to the Macy's Gimbel's rivalry of New York. Yeah. Donaldsons eventually was folded. Yeah.
Didn't they become Carson Peary Scott or something like that?
Donaldsons purchased Powers. Yeah. Powers are gone, and then Carson Peary Scott bought Donaldsons.
Yep.
And did what a lot of companies have to their detriment have done. Decided that Minnesotans like big name, big market names, and they took down.
Wrong.
I love when you drive by some of our original malls. You see how many bolts are in the concrete wall, how many names have changed.
Folks, people still call Macy's Dayton's, and they always will because it's homegrown. It's part of our fiber. It's in our DNA. And don't try to wow us with big names like Gimbel's and Macy's.
They'll call. They just may not shop there anymore.
Right.
So again, and Dayton's did win they won the rivalry, and then Dayton's, that's another bolt in the concrete wall now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's play clip number 16.
There's so much joy in giving. We can't wait to see their eyes. That special gift will bring the joy of sharing their surprise.
Christmas is shining bright. And Christian Dior offers a dazzling collection of gifts for men. Ties, dress shirts, cufflinks, collars, and much, much more.
Much, much more. Cufflinks.
That aired right after fire coverage, so,
that's beautiful, isn't it, huh?
Your nerves are on edge.
Talk about your timing, huh? Let's go down and get some hot earrings, if you know what I mean.
I wanted to, lighten the mood a little bit. Again, this has been a great conversation on the fire. 30 years ago, not this weekend, we're not talking about a recent story, talking about something happened 30 years ago, but you were talking a lot about the people, and I appreciate, for you always giving lots of credit to the producers, dispatchers.
We couldn't do anything without them.
looking at some odd year for today, I ran across a promotion from KSTP, mm-hmm. a place you're well aware of, and it was a promo that aired about 25, 28 years ago, mm-hmm. and it involves almost like a little bit of a soap opera of a child in the hospital, but the child makes it through this illness because of the KSTP news team.
Really? Good for us.
Clip number 13.
I don't want you folks to worry about this, especially you, Jay. We got a great team working on this.
I know.
What is team spirit? Anything in the Nicholas case?
Nothing yet.
It's making the extra effort because you really care.
Dr. Sire.
It's doing whatever's needed to get the job done.
Cindy, it's Mike. They found one.
They've got a kidney for the Nicholas girl.
We need a crew at Hennepin County.
It's the spirit that makes us the team to turn to.
Tomorrow night at 10 o'clock, the Eyewitness News team will perform brain surgery at the University of Minnesota, saving a loved one near you.
I want to run out
for team spirit.
I want to run out, grab a hat, and throw it in the air when they say they found a kidney.
I wanted to forget that. That's terrible.
The equivalent of a medical team saving a kidney is...
We do car wrecks and miracles, medical miracles.
The best part is that the news medical specialist is actually right along with the operating team. He's right there with his camera.
Dr. Michael Breen.
Michael Breen,
probably,
yeah. He was probably consulting with the surgeon.
Right.
So, Stan.
proud moments in broadcasting.
That might be the happiest, most uplifting commercial
I've
ever
heard. I know. I'm going to feel good all day. Yeah.
So what do you remember about the rebuild? So we go through the tense fire, and what do you remember about the rebuild process? Because the Gavity Commons in the Wells Fargo Center.
Loondale, they call it.
Right.
Gavity in Latin means loon, so we called it Loondale. That has been a spectacular, part of it's been a flop, hasn't it? They combined, they ran skyways connecting stores mm-hmm. over a couple of city blocks down there. Mm-hmm. And Neiman Marcus was in there. Is it still there?
I think they're on their way out.
Saks Fifth Avenue.
That's going
come
away
and
too.
Gone.
Right, right.
Lovely, lovely shops. I used to pop in there to see, what a $150 tie looks like and then leave.
Well, you had a black account there, right?
Absolutely. Right, unlimited sky's the limit. Yeah. No, actually, even for the high rollers, the blue bloods, the prices were too much, and they just had—they never got traction down there. Mm-hmm. I think people still, long, like you said before, these wonderful names from New York and the rest. Don't cut it here.
It's
Dayton's and Donaldson's. That's what people want, and they're not Rube's either. I mean, those two stores, as well as Powers, they carried nice things too at affordable prices. And we're not going to be wowed by the big names here. Just not.
No, and right now, I mean, and I think that just, retail in general is just it's a challenging business, and real estate's a challenging business right now, and I think that's kind of a perfect storm.
Broadcasting is a challenging business right now.
I never heard that.
It's the economy, right?
Yep. Well, right, the economy, what's it called, economy is stupid, right?
Well, did you call me stupid? Well, thank you. That's the nicest thing anybody's said to me all day.
No, of course not.
I had a question for you, Stan.
Yeah, yes, James.
So the people who set this fire initially were teenagers, right?
I don't recall. I think kids.
It was juveniles, right?
Right. They were in there. They were probably just hanging out, maybe smoking some, who knows what. And certainly trying to keep warm. But there had to be other places to keep warm.
Yeah, I'm just curious if any criminal charges were ever actually brought against
these
kids.
Maybe you've got that.
Juveniles were arrested and later convicted of setting the fire using a torch found on the partially demolished Donaldson site. Yeah. They made their own torch.
Well, they made their own trouble. They were out looking for trouble, and they got it. And they could have killed a lot of people.
Our own Reed Hagen, he mentioned that before this whole fire went up and the construction was happening, he could go down and just walk into the building. Like they had no security.
Nothing. That's right. It's a derelict building, and anybody and everybody who wanted to could get in there. And again, it's a major miracle there wasn't massive loss of life. I mean, it's, even though it was an empty building, I mean, with that many people around it, it could have been disastrous.
Well, thank you for your coverage, and thank you for, talking with us today. And
Tom, this is your maiden voyage here.
This is the first
show called Flashback.
Flashback Twin Cities.
Flashback Twin Cities. And, I feel compelled to, like launching a ship to crash a bottle of champagne. We don't have a ship's bow here. How about over your head, Tom? Is that okay? Can we?
It's had a few crashes before, so
I'm just impressed you brought champagne.
Congratulations. It's good. The premise is to bring back our local history through sound.
And what I want to do is be able to relive that moment as close to the first time we saw it as possible.
Right.
And on my website, tcmedianow.com, you can watch not only these fire clips, but also other events that happened 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and watch it with the original commercials. Watch them the same way you watch them on a wood console TV. Just watch them from a computer or your smartphone.
Old blonde Admiral television set with the doors that you shut after you were done looking at the black and white screen.
Zenith with a space control remote.
Yep, right.
Yeah.
The remote was the guy who got up with the beer and went over and turned the channel. That was the remote.
Well, and much like the weather ball, which was demolished and scrapped, I do to this day believe there's tapes that are being tossed away or even slides or films. So if you think that you have something you cannot play again, don't throw it away. It is history, and if not the Thanksgiving fire or something else that happened significantly.
Speaking of vintage audio, I just want to throw in a quick promo, a shameless self-promotion here if I could, on our show today on the Stan Turner Show at noon. We're going to talk about the Andrews Sisters in wartime, 1944, Christmas 1944. We got the gang from the History Theater in St. Paul coming down. They're staging Christmas of Swing right now, so we'll hear all about that. It's a fun ride.
Well, it is December 1st, so it is does fish. I guess the Christmas season probably kicked off on Thanksgiving, but
I think it was July.
Yeah, I think it's July. But it depends if you're in the retail calendar, if you're on the on the human calendar. But I do.
Who's on the human calendar?
Well, you know, those of us that you know have to you know live in the real world. I do want to let's play one. Let's play clip number 14. This is every Christmas. I think that companies have done a great justice to us by saving a lot of the same ads that can play over and over again, and these become much like our Christmas dinner. These commercials become part of our tradition. So let's hear 14.
Thanks a lot. Merry Christmas.
Coming home for Christmas for I think 30 years now. He's been coming home making that same cup of Folgers coffee.
He hasn't made it yet. He's been trying for 30 years to get
it's
home.
It's been tough to get home for Christmas.
That snow in Minnesota's tough to get through.
Next week, two people who've been stuck in 1975 for the last 20 years, Martini and Olive, will join me live in studio. So thanks, everyone. This is Twin Cities Flashback.
Club 1220 is KLBB Stillwater, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Your home for Green Bay Packer football, St. Paul Saints baseball, the good times, super.